Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 10 minutes past 8 o'clock now on this Wednesday morning, May the 16th. And we have a special treat today. We have Kevin McKinley here. He is a certified financial planner. He is also the host of On Your Money, heard Sunday mornings here on the Ideas Network. Kevin is in town because he is a member of the Governor's Council on Financial Literacy, and there's an event today for that event, the Money Smart Week in Wisconsin, which is actually taking place in October. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Joy.
Thank you very much for being here.
My pleasure.
So what's going on here with this Money Smart Week thing?
It's a meeting at the Governor's Mansion, actually. Wisconsin is, in my mind, the leader among all states in terms of promoting financial literacy among its residents, and through Dave Mansell and Lori Keating Heineman at the Department of Financial Institutions and Jessica Doyle, this has been a project of all of theirs for several years, but last year was the first statewide event, and we are kicking it off again this year at a meeting today at the Governor's Mansion, and there'll be representatives from public organizations, from media, from various financial institutions around the state, and it's very well represented, a really great bunch of people who have worked tirelessly to put this together.
Yeah, so Wisconsin's good at promoting financial literacy. Why is this important as far as you're concerned?
Because there is a growing movement in this country that we are becoming more responsible for our own financial futures, and that can be both good and bad. It's good because it gives us the power over our own future, but the bad news is if we're not educated and we don't have the information and the facts and the tools at hand, people can make huge mistakes that can affect their lives and their families. And so that's why we believe that people should be able to get access to the information so that they can make the decisions that are right for them.
What is one of the biggest mistakes people can make?
One of the biggest mistakes I think people make, and it is true in all incomes and all levels of education, is that they are not aware of how much money they spend. And it's not a case of saying that they're spending it in the wrong places. It's just they're not aware of how much money is leaking out of their pockets. I've recommended to people who make $10,000 a year and people who make hundreds of thousands of dollars a year that if this is you and you feel like, you know, you go to the time machine or the ATM on a Saturday, take out $150, and on Tuesday you have nothing in your pocket to show for that, write down what you're spending and get a diary for 30 days, and you'll be shocked at where that money is going, and you'll start to realize, here's some places I can cut back my spending in the short term so that I can accomplish my long-term goals.
Well, we have some of the best money moves that we can make that we will share throughout the hour. You have a list of 20 here, but maybe we will get through most of them anyway, with Kevin McKinley, who is a certified financial planner, practitioner at Robert W. Baird & Company in Eau Claire, the host of On Your Money, heard Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock here on the Ideas Network. He's also the author of Make Your Kid a Millionaire, 11 Easy Ways Anyone Can Secure a Child's Financial Future. He is a member of the Governor's Council on Financial Literacy and is in Madison today for the kickoff promotion of Money Smart Week in Wisconsin, which will take place October 7th through the 13th. You can ask Kevin a question at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and community with your email. And I take it, Kevin, we're not going to take the questions, should I buy X stock?
No, we don't do buy, sell, and hold on the show, and I have no idea what you should buy, sell, and hold, so we won't cover that right now.
Now, Greg's a lot funnier than I am, but I do enjoy the program. The On Your Money is now, used to be a regional program, mm-hmm. Heard only in the Eau Claire area or western Wisconsin, and as of what, last July?
Last July.
Now statewide Sunday mornings on the Ideas Network.
That's right. The good people at Wisconsin Public Radio decided to punish the entire state with our show, and we tried to get it on earlier on Sunday mornings, but 7 was the best they could do. So we're We're there for now, but we're trying to move it down to about 3:30, 4 a.m. But we're in negotiations with the BBC right now to see if we can pick up some of their time.
You mentioned my
lovely co-host, Greg Pangallo. Mm-hmm. He and I have been doing the show, it seems like forever, but we enjoy it very much, and it's an indulgence of the listeners that they put up with us for the hour that they do.
Is there any way maybe we can mention at the end of the hour if people have a question or an email or something that they want answered on the program that they can how they can get in touch with the program?
Sure, they can go to our website for the show. It's onyourmoney.com. Mm-hmm. You can send me an email at kevin@onyourmoney.com, and of course the questions. We try to cover everything we possibly can. We don't answer personal questions, but the questioner can remain anonymous if they wish. Usually we find that people who are in serious financial trouble prefer to remain anonymous. People who've struck it rich, they want everyone to know exactly who they are and where they're from. So we try to keep it anonymous if you wish.
I'm going to start with my own personal question, since I'm the host of the show.
Sure. You want to turn the volume down so no one else can hear? Or?
No.
Okay.
It's actually on your list of the five things, at least, that you can do, best money moves. This actually happened when my my husband is a veteran. And I don't know if you recall some time ago when veterans' personal privacy information was inadvertently
compromised.
It was compromised. Very good way to put it. And veterans were encouraged to examine their credit reports to make sure nothing was going on and freeze credit reports, perhaps, to make sure nothing happened. And that was the first time I actually ever did that. I went on and I checked out our credit reports, and it was something we should do on a regular basis.
Absolutely. Mm. And it's becoming, it was important. It is much more important now, because your credit report, for people who don't know, it contains information on loans you've had outstanding, the balances due, accounts you might have closed in the past, any late payments you've had. Now, that's obviously important if you are intending to borrow money at some point in the future. It'll affect whether or not you get the loan. It'll affect the interest rate that you pay. But more and more parties are checking your credit report to decide if they want to do business with you. Homeowners insurance rates can be affected by a bad credit report. Auto insurance rates can affect it. A lot of renters here in Madison have to submit a credit report to a landlord before that they can sign a lease. And here's something that's really frightening for people with bad credit reports. About a third of large employers right now require an annual credit report check from their employees when they're applying for a job. And usually by the time you get to that point in the job application process, it's too late to fix it. So it's a very good idea not only to check your credit report, you can get a free version at annualcreditreport.com. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people with concern, like in your husband's case, about identity theft, Wisconsin residents can actually put a freeze on their credit report so that companies cannot access it to open a credit account or a loan without your express written permission. And you can do that at privacy.wi.gov, privacy.wi.gov. There are, Wisconsin is one of the 24 states in the country that allow its residents to put a freeze on their credit report. There's a small fee to do it, but it's a very good idea to have that put in place, privacy.wi.gov.
Yeah, good stuff. You're recommending here that, get rid of credit card offers, or how I can get rid of credit card offers?
That's another very popular subject that we have on our show. A lot of people, for some reason, we have a lot of responsible people who listen to the show, and I will take complete credit for that. But they don't want any more credit cards than they already have. And you can go to a website that's run by the Direct Marketing Association, but they put it up to help people reduce or eliminate the number of credit card offers they get. And if you go to optoutprescreen.com, optoutprescreen.com, you can actually get your name removed from a lot of those 0% and no interest payments, no fee ever credit cards. And optoutprescreen.com. And if you go to that, they are going to ask for your Social Security number. That's how they know it's you. So it's okay to put your Social Security number in there.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. I was just smiling to myself, because I have been getting, I swear, every single day, Capital One sends a different letter saying, you need this credit card. So I can, if I do that, I can get rid of those.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, let's take some calls. We're getting a bunch of them. And Judy in Reedstown had a question that's related to credit cards. So, Judy, go ahead.
Well, actually, I have an experience that it shows how sort of illogical it can be to relate your credit report to something like your auto insurance premium. Last year, I found out that my credit report was being used to set my auto insurance premium. I'm 66. I've never had a moving violation in my life. However, I'm having a dispute with a medical organization over a bill. I lost my eye, and I'm not paying the bill right now until I get some satisfaction. And auto insurance company is using my poor credit report, which I've got because I still haven't settled with the hospital, to set my premiums for driving a car.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. And that is not uncommon at all. It's sad, but it is not uncommon. And have you contacted the auto insurance company to explain your situation,
Judy? Yes, I did, and they told me, and I knew the local person, it wasn't his fault. They told me that's just what they did, and I just dropped them and got a different insurance
Good
company.
Good for you.
So I hope that doesn't happen to everybody. It should be a little more relevant.
No, good for you. Thank you for sharing that story, because a lot of people can't even believe that this issue exists, but it definitely exists, and it will become more prevalent in the future, not less prevalent.
We're talking with Kevin McKinley, a certified financial planner, host of On Your Money, heard Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock here on the Ideas Network. He's also a member of the Governor's Council on Financial Literacy and is in Madison today for the kickoff promotion of Money Smart Week in Wisconsin. And we welcome your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Ben Marins is with you this afternoon between 4 and 6 for At Issue with Ben Marins. After 5, Ben will talk about autism with the author of Daniel Isn't Talking. That's coming up after 5 o'clock. We're talking money with Kevin McKinley, certified financial planner at Robert W. Baird & Company in Eau Claire. And our next caller is Kathy in Appleton. Hi, Kathy. You're on the air.
Good morning. I've got a couple of different 401ks when I was employed at other companies, and I'm wondering if those can be consolidated.
Great question, Kathy, and thank you for calling. Yes, they can, and they should be, and there's a couple of reasons why. First of all, you will find that that the provider of those 401ks probably wants you to consolidate them in your own IRA. And that's a good idea to do that because, first of all, you may be being charged an annual fee for each one of those accounts. So by consolidating them, you may at least reduce it down to one annual fee. And if the account is large enough, there may be no fee for it whatsoever. But more importantly, companies switch 401k providers all the time, and as your account is bounced from one place to another or you move from one place to another, it may become very difficult to find you. And if you lose track of that statement and that account and the company doesn't know who you are and there's been a lot of turnover, they could actually turn your money over to the state eventually if they can't find you to get it out of there. So it's a good idea to open up a self-directed IRA, get all of the money into one place, and it's a lot easier to keep an eye on it if it is all in one account.
And how much money should we put in our 401ks?
All of it. All of the money you have in the 401k. The average deferral rate among Americans who do defer into 403bs or 401ks is about 6% or so. My rule of thumb is that I'd prefer to see people try to put 10% of their savings into their retirement plans. And the reason I say that is not only will you be saving money for retirement, but you will immediately cut your taxes if you are in a 30% overall tax bracket and you put $1,000 into a 403b or a 401k, you'll cut your taxes that year by $300. Then you'll cut your taxes going forward over that time, and most people are in a lower tax bracket in retirement than they are when they're working. So the money, you defer taxes at a high rate while you contribute it, and then when you pull it out, it's at a lower rate.
Yeah. My husband does put as much into the 401k as he can in terms of matching, you know, the employer matching it. But we also do Roth IRAs. That's a good idea?
One of my favorite investments in the world is the Roth IRA. We're We joke on Your Money that we are sponsored by the National Roth IRA Foundation because we are always recommending it for people who qualify and are looking to save. The great thing about the Roth IRA is that it's bad news is you do not get a tax deduction on immediate contributions. But what a lot of people don't know about it, Joy, is that you can pull the contributions back out of a Roth IRA whenever you want, for any reason whatsoever, with no taxes and no penalties at all. Now, that's the contribution portion. So if you put $4,000, let's say, into a Roth IRA this year, and next year you need the money for something, you can pull $4,000 back out again.
You shouldn't have told me that.
You need a little discipline on it, but it makes not only a good savings vehicle for retirement because the withdrawals are tax-free, but even people who are saying, we'll get a lot of questions today about, I'm saving for college, what should I be doing? My advice is to max out your Roth IRAs if you're eligible first before you start putting money aside for college, because you can borrow money to go to college. You cannot borrow money to retire.
All right. And should I pay off the mortgage on my house or not?
There's about a 15-step process that we put people through when we get this question on Your Money. But basically, no. And if you can possibly contribute more money to your retirement plan at work, if you have any high credit card debt, high interest credit card debt, or auto loans or something like that out, you should pay those off. And then only, and only if you've got everything else covered and you can't deduct the interest, does it usually make better sense to pay the mortgage off.
We go next to Michael in Madison. Hello, Michael. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
I was just wondering how your guest felt about funding Roth IRAs for kids for their future.
I think it's about the best thing you can do for a kid, and I don't want to get all of academia upset with me. I went to school at the University of Wisconsin, goodest school in the Big Ten, if you ask me. But I think that you may be better off putting money in a Roth IRA for a child than you are paying for that kid's college education, especially if the kid has enough earnings as a teenager to max out the contributions. And the reason being is that a college education, the Census Bureau tells us a person graduating from college will probably earn about $1 million more over their lifetime than a person who just stopped going to school at high school. But if you put $4,000 into a Roth IRA for a teenager over 4 years and that money grows at hypothetical return of, say, 8% or so, that money will not only be worth several hundred thousand dollars when that child retires, but the child can pull it out tax-free. So as long as the child has earned income, the child must have legitimate earned income. You can't pay him to sit there and play the Xbox. But if he or she has legitimate earned income, you can use that income as the basis for a contribution to a Roth IRA. And, Michael, I think it's a great idea.
All right. Thanks very much, Michael, for the call. Bob in Elk Mound is with us now. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Great. How are you?
Not bad at all. Kevin, a lot of times you hear on the radio now that people are advertising to watch your credit for you and report to you anything suspicious. Is that a good idea?
I think that in terms of moral and ethical issues, I think it's one step above, paying the mob to for protection for you.
I take it you don't like that idea.
I don't think it's a bad idea. I just don't think it's worth the price that it's paid. There's a lot of people preying on the fear of identity theft and things like that. But I think people who are diligent in getting their own credit report, getting their own, protecting their Social Security number, can do it on their own and save money. But if it's something that helps you sleep better, go ahead and do it. I just don't think it's worth the money.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks very much, Bob, for the call. It says here you think that I should open a HELOC. What's that?
HELOC was a character in Lord of the Rings, actually. No, it's HELOC is an acronym for Home Equity Line of Credit. And this is not a home equity loan. It's a home equity line of credit. And this is something I think that everyone should have as long as you are responsible and disciplined enough to not use it. Mm. So what I would suggest you do is you go get the home equity line of credit, open it up for as much as the bank or credit union is willing to give you. And what that does is that allows you a safety net so that if you get in trouble, you get behind on your payments, you lose your job, you have a medical emergency, something like that, you can get immediate access to the equity in your home without a credit check, without going through the process of applying again. And the problem with not having a HELOC, Joy, is that when you need one, that's the most difficult time to get it. Mm-hmm. And so it's good to have it set up in advance. Hopefully you'll never use it, but when you do need it, it's very good to have it in place already.
Talking with Kevin McKinley, talking about getting some personal financial advice from Kevin McKinley. He is a certified financial planner, practitioner at Robert W. Baird & Company in Eau Claire. You also hear him Sunday mornings if you're up at 7 o'clock listening to the Ideas Network. He is host of On Your Money, also the author of Make Your Kid a Millionaire, 11 Easy Ways Anyone Can Secure a Child's Financial Future. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890 if you have a question for him. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. Bob in Viroqua is with us now. Hi, Bob.
Morning.
Morning.
Thanks for taking my call. The question I have is this. When you write the credit card company to indicate that you are terminating their credit card, is it a good idea to send a copy of that letter to the major reporting, credit reporting agencies?
This sounds strange, but yes, it is actually. Even though the credit reporting agencies will know that that you have canceled your account eventually, but this,
will they know that that it was initiated by me,
rather than
the credit card company?
There is the rub, Bob. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing to note, because if it looks like, if it goes on your report that the credit card company canceled your account, that may affect your credit negatively. If it goes on the report that you canceled the account, it will not affect it. So it's like that old episode of Seinfeld. You want to tell the credit card company that I am breaking up with you, and make sure that that is noted. You maybe not, you don't even have to write a letter at the time, but just make sure that after you check your report and after you've canceled your credit card, Bob, that you do actually look at the credit report and note that you did indeed initiate the cancellation.
Okay, but how would the credit reporting agency know that unless they were told? Is the assumption that the credit card company is going to tell them that I initiated it?
As far as I know, yes, it will go on there correctly if you initiate it, but you just, it's okay. Better to double check. It's easier to correct it after it's gone on the credit report than it is in advance.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Bob. You know, I was often wondering about that. Sometimes I have some credit cards, maybe way too many of them, that I don't even use. And I'm wondering if I should cancel those or just keep them inactive, or, you know, whether or not it looks bad to cancel these cards or be canceled by the credit card issuer.
Some of your credit score is affected by the number of accounts you have, but typically the amount of available credit you have and have access to and haven't used can actually hurt your score. So it's a good idea to do that for a couple of reasons, one of which is, again, you're probably paying some form of annual fee. Also, Gimbel's department store has closed, Joyce.
That's exactly what I'm saying. It wasn't Gimbel's, but maybe I opened an account because I'd get 15% off at a particular department store, but I really don't use it.
Or the free
often.
Frango mints. Right?
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a good idea. If you're not using the card, it's a good idea to cancel it and just have one less. I'm all about simplification. And mm-hmm. So go ahead and cancel the card. Again, just make sure it's noted that you initiated the transaction.
Judy in Milwaukee, hi, you're on the air.
Hello, and thanks for taking my call. I have a question about rebalancing now that I am getting closer to retirement age. And I have looked into municipal bonds from Puerto Rico, which are tax-free at the state and federal level, are insured and are non-callable and are AAA rated. Is there any reason not to invest in these, and what proportion of one's bond investments should one put in Puerto Rican municipal bonds?
That's wonderful, and if you really play it right, Judy, you can get a tax-deductible trip down to Puerto Rico just to check on the project, make sure it really exists. But no, I actually, for people in the upper tax brackets, and those would be people who generally make six figures, the tax-free bonds can be a really nice part of a portfolio. The problem is that unless you have several hundred thousand dollars to invest, you have to isolate your money into one particular bond, and they're a little less liquid. They're not bad in and of themselves. I think they can be a great investment, but it's difficult to diversify for it. The other issue about tax-free municipal bonds is it's great because you can avoid state and federal taxes for Wisconsin residents on these Puerto Rican bonds as long as they're qualified. And if they're insured, that they get a AAA rating, as Judy mentioned, and they can be very conservative investments. One of the things a lot of people don't know is that when they retire and begin taking Social Security is tax-free in and of itself. But there's a formula that takes into account your outside income, and that can make Social Security taxable. I think about 40% of Social Security recipients right now pay income taxes on their Social Security. And tax-free bond interest is not taxable as income. However, the interest is figured into that formula that can then make your Social Security taxable. So in retirement, you may be better off having a fully taxable investment and paying the taxes, and you may still end up with more in your pocket than you would if you were to get a tax-free bond.
Thanks, Judy, for the call. Got an email from Eileen in Duluth, and she says, good morning, Kevin. My husband and I do have a 401k plan through his employer. However, we also need to start investing more money for our retirement. We are 48 and 53. I've read a lot about compounded interest, but I am confused as to what is the best, money markets or annuities or help. Where does someone get started, I guess?
Well, I think maxing out the 401k is the first step. If you're over 50, I think this year you can put in up to $20,000 if over 50, or you're in earned income, which is ever less. That's a great idea to do. It's a good idea to put the savings aside. The Roth IRA, again, is another great way to look. Now, distributions from a Roth IRA, as we mentioned, Roth IRA distributions do not affect your Social Security taxation right now. So Roth IRAs are a great combination report for that. In terms of money market, the bad news about money market is that most of those accounts pay maybe 3 or 4% interest. They're very safe. They're very liquid. But they're not good long-term savings vehicles, because usually your cost of living is rising at least as fast as the interest is on the money market. So for short-term goals, the money market is fantastic. For longer-term savings, you're usually better off in something that carries a little more volatility and risk, but will hopefully give you a better long-term return. And in Eileen's case, they might be looking at retiring in 10 years, let's say. People at the age of 60 have a very good chance of living to 85 or even 90. And retiring at 60 means that you still have a 20 to 25-year investment time frame. So one mistake that many people do make is they go too conservative upon retiring, and that works great for 60, 62, 65, but by the time they're 75, their money hasn't grown as fast as their cost of living has.
Thanks to Eileen. Sarah in Elkhorn is next. Hi, Sarah. You're on the air.
Hi, Kevin. I love your show.
Thank you, Sarah.
I'm a small business owner, and I'm trying to build credit in my business, but it's one of those catch-22s. To build credit, you have to, like, I tried to get a cell phone, and they wanted me to put $500 down as a deposit. And I just want a way that I can build the credit in my business, so if I needed to get a loan in the future for it, I can. Now, my credit is not very good, so I can't use my name on anything for it. So what would be the best thing I could do to do that?
Actually, that's a really good question, and not just for small business owners, but for anyone. And it's actually a case, Sarah, where anyone can get a credit card or some form of plastic. The question is what's it going to cost you? You can get a secured credit card or a debit card or some kind of thing that draws upon money you've already deposited. There might be some higher fees to start off. You might pay a higher interest rate. But once you use that and show that you can charge a little bit and then pay it off immediately, that will build up your credit score pretty quickly. And again, we've talked about it doesn't take a whole lot to switch over to the other side, where you're actually trying to get less credit card offers in your mailbox. So I would try to find some kind of secured card. Again, you're going to pay a little bit up front in terms of fees, in terms of higher interest rates. But once you prove you can use it responsibly, it's kind of like a learner's permit that you get when you're learning to drive. When you prove that you can use it responsibly, you can graduate to a better account. And it's a really good idea to do it, because when you need money for your business, again, it's too late to fix your credit when you're sitting at the banker's desk.
Thanks, Sarah. Good luck. Larry in Madison is with us now. Hi, Larry.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Larry. Thanks for calling.
I enjoyed listening to your show. I was catching my way back to Minnesota. A couple of things. How about people recommending that they carry a higher deductible on their homeowners? I mean, in most homeowner situations, you can carry even a $10,000 deductible and put the balance in a Roth IRA.
That's
in case catastrophic events happens, you can pull it right back out like you were suggesting. What's your feelings on that?
I love it. I think it's a phenomenal idea for a lot of reasons, one of which is, first of all, you'll cut your premium quite a bit. If you have a $250 deductible now and you raise it to even a $1,000 deductible on your homeowner's insurance, you can probably cut your premium by about 25 to 30%.
Hey, I'm doing that. Yeah. Go ahead.
And here's why that's really important. You do not want to make a lot of claims on your homeowner's insurance policy. The reason being is that the first claim, if it's a legitimate claim, the insurance company usually pay it off, no problem. The second one, especially if it comes within a few years, they'll put you on a kind of a watch list. And the third one may get you canceled. And once you've been canceled by a homeowner's insurance company, it's very difficult to get back on to another company's coverage. So you're wise to carry a high deductible, pay for the little stuff in cash, or don't make the claim at all. And you can actually see what the insurance companies see. There's something called the Clue Report. You can see it at choicepoint.com, and you can see what the insurance companies are using on your home. And especially if you're, you know, we're just kicking off, Joy, the kind of the home buying and selling season mm-hmm. right now. If you are considering buying a home, ask to see the home's Clue Report, C-L-U-E. You cannot get it on a home you do not own, but the homeowner can get it on their own home and provide it. The seller should provide it to you because that's a five-year history of claims made on the home. And there have been cases where people have been looking at a home, they found one they bought, the offer's been accepted, but because there was a some water damage 3 years ago or something, it holds up the sale, and it makes it very difficult for both the buyer and the seller. So take a look at the home's Clue Report, and again, you can get a copy at choicepoint.com.
I didn't know that. Learning all sorts of things this hour. Talking,
glad you showed up today,
yeah, with Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner, practitioner at Robert W. Baird & Company in Eau Claire. He's the host of On Your Money, heard Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock here on the Ideas Network, author of Make Your Kid a Millionaire. He's also a member of the Governor's Council on Financial Literacy. He's in Madison today for the kickoff promotion of Money Smart Week in Wisconsin, which will take place October 7th through the 13th. You can talk to Kevin, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send your question via email, talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Stay tuned here on the Ideas Network. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Peter Donalds is in for Kathleen Dunn. According to Peter's guest after 9, the Democratic takeover of the House and Senate has opened the floodgates for climate and energy legislation. That's coming up after 9 o'clock. Tomorrow at this time, by the way, I'll be talking with Gina Collada. She's with the New York Times, and she's also the author of Rethinking Thin, The New Science of Weight Loss and the Myths and Realities of Dieting. I'll bet we'll learn lots of stuff tomorrow at this time as well. Talking with Kevin McKinley about our personal finances this hour, and also in town today for the kickoff promotion of Money Smart Week in Wisconsin, which will be taking place October 7th through the 13th. And exactly what's going on during Money Smart Week, Kevin?
It last year was the first statewide effort, and in Wisconsin. And there were events all over the state. And what this would typically be is some person with expertise would stand up in front of a group of 15 or 20 people and talk to them for an hour about credit reports, or how to get a mortgage, or how to get mm-hmm. out of debt, or how to save for retirement. And it's a very low-key event. Almost all the events are free, and there's no sales pitch or anything like that. But you can find events in any area throughout the state at moneysmartwi.org, moneysmartwi.org. You'll be hearing a lot more about this over the next 5 months, but moneysmartwi.org is where you can go to find events in your area.
Linda in Eau Claire is with us next. Hi, Linda. You're on the air.
Hi. I started with a small bank, First Federal, and got a mortgage, and then they became Associated, and they got my mortgage. Now Associated has sold my mortgage to a company I've never heard of. I'm wondering if I should be concerned or if I should be thinking about going to someone I would like to have a mortgage with. My current rate is 5.69, so...
For what rate is that, Linda? For what term?
It's 30-year.
Right. And here's a couple of reasons not to do that. First one is it's very common. I challenge you to find many lenders who aren't selling mortgages off. It's part of the the lubrication in the entire process. The second thing is if you try to pay this off with a new mortgage, you're probably going to, if you go out on a 30-year Linda, you're probably going to end up paying about 6.1 or 6.2%, and that's assuming that that you are going to get the mortgage anyway. Lending standards have tightened up a little bit in the last year or two, and so I wouldn't be too concerned about it. You know, the idea, I'd love to go into the scene from It's a Wonderful Life where all the money actually is, but it's okay to have a mortgage that is owned by someone else. The bank is still servicing it. You can still get any help you want there, but that's not uncommon at all, and it actually be very difficult to find a large pool of mortgages that are held solely by the financial institution.
Thanks, Linda, for the call. Say, have those mortgage offers of zero money down and low teaser rates gone away now?
They haven't gone away. It's just that that some of the companies that were actually many of the companies that were offering them have gone out of business because in a shocking development, people took advantage of them. And some of the people couldn't handle their payments and the companies went under. So yes, you won't be seeing as many of those because there is a less supply of that free money going around. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Again, a lot of people who took companies up on those offers have not defaulted on their mortgage, and they got a mortgage when they couldn't otherwise get it, or they're paying a lower interest rate than they otherwise would have. And the vast majority of people who did take those out are in their homes, they're homeowners, and they're building equity in their homes. So it's not a bad thing. We just tend to hear about the portion of the people who have had trouble with it.
Betty in Beloit is with us now. Hi, Betty.
Hi. I have a problem dealing with one of the credit card companies. I'm one of these persons who, when tax forms were sent out, had my Social Security number put on the form.
No.
And then I did receive a thing from the state to write to the credit company with an ID number, which I did. And I called them, and I had no results at all. I was kept on hold for 33 minutes the first time. There was three credit cards listed as being open, which had been closed, and I wrote a letter on March 30th to have these closed. I was the first call I made, I was told that it was best to keep my credit cards listed as open, even though I did close them and hadn't used them for my credit rating.
So in other words, it's a good idea to lie. That's what they were saying, right, Betty?
Right, I guess. I don't know. And I did go to one of the credit card companies that issued the credit card, and they says, well, we only sponsor the credit card. We have nothing to do with it. So then I called the credit card company, and they says, well, we don't have anything listed as open here. And then I wrote the letter to the Equifax and asked them why this is listed, and I want these taken off my credit card information. And I have had no response, and I'm wondering if you can tell me what else I can do.
Well, the first thing you can do is go back and hold for a little bit longer than 33 minutes. I mean, it's terrible,
yeah.
but that's the truth. After that, Betty, you want to be dealing with the credit card reporting agencies first and foremost, and that's Equifax, Transperian, and the Santa Maria. Those are the three. No, but if you go to annualcreditreport.com, you can get one free report from each one of those and check and reconcile it. And then it is a pain. Now, if you're really concerned about it, you may have to contact an attorney who can start writing nasty letters on your behalf, and that will certainly get their attention, but it's going to cost you some money as well.
Good luck with that, Betty. You know, I was thinking about whether I was going to buy a new car, or not a new car, it would be a used car. I always buy used cars. I'm looking at your list of smart money moves, and I just see the headline, pay cash for cars. Really? So I should pay for my car with cash and not take out a loan for that?
There are three good reasons to borrow money. One is to go to college. The other is to buy a home. The other is to start a business. After that, buying a car with borrowed money is one of the dumbest things most people do, because what happens is while the payments do not go down, the car value mm-hmm. does. And unless you can get a better return on your money than what you're losing on the depreciation of the car and paying an interest cost on the loan, you are better off paying cash for the car. And you're better off driving the car you have, Joy, than you are buying a new one. Cars depreciate on average about 15 to 20% per year. So if you have a $5,000 car right now, you are going to lose about $1,000 in value. If you go out and buy a $30,000 car, or in your case, I know you love the Maserati, so $140,000
at least.
Right. Yeah. Let's say you buy a $30,000 car. Well, that will depreciate about 15 or 20%. So you lose actually about $6,000 in that first year that you drive it around. Don't give me that baloney about, oh, the maintenance and things like that. What it typically is people buy new cars. There's nothing wrong with it, but people buy new cars because they want to drive a new car. And if you can mm-hmm. pay cash for it, you go right ahead and buy it. But if you need to finance it, you're probably better off just buying a less expensive car, or keeping the one you own.
That's good. I have a 93, just so you know. So
good for
I've had it for quite a while.
I've been in the Wisconsin Public Radio parking lot. There's a paucity of brand new models.
Yeah.
That's right.
Barbara in Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. Mm-hmm. Before I ask my question, I want to make a suggestion to the woman before. When I've had problems with merchants and other things, I will contact the state agency that regulates them. And in all cases that I've done that, the problem has been resolved without the need to go to a lawyer. So I would suggest people find out what agency regulates whatever particular business or credit card company and contact that agency. They may find good help there.
Mm-hmm. That's a good idea, Barbara.
But the reason I called was I pay my credit card bills every month, so I have no need to pay interest. However, my husband took out a cash advance at one point on a particular card, I guess at an ATM machine. And so the next month there was the fee, of course, and then there was an interest charge. Well, I paid off that month, and then next month there was still an interest charge. And when I called, they said that, and I don't exactly know the reason, you can never fully pay off that interest because it's always continued month to month. So my only recourse was to cancel the card, and because I was very angry at that point. Then I realized I was going to go away for a long trip in another week, and I needed a credit card. So I quick had to apply, and fortunately, because I have good credit, I was provided with a credit card over the phone. But I would suggest that people keep a card in reserve, even if you don't use it much, if you travel, maybe if you don't travel, you don't need it. But anyway, can you tell me why that was my only recourse to cancel the card, why they didn't stop charging me interest?
Well, it's a good idea to cancel any card that has those terms in place mm-hmm. anyway, so good for you. And it's fortunate that you were able to get out and get a new card quickly. But I'm not very familiar with that situation that they do it. It sounds like I think I'm going to open up a credit card company and do that and just say that you can never pay this interest off. It sounds a lot easier than working.
Yeah. I would not do business with that credit card company. Next, we go to Mary in Appleton. Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Good morning. I was wondering, what are you recommending for fixed income for retirement and non-retirement portfolios?
You're saying that you want something that you can just count on and you can live off of?
It's more just like for diversification.
Sure. One of my favorite things is one of the simplest things, Mary, and that's certificates of deposit. And the reason that I love those is the interest rates are very competitive. Right now you can still get 4.5% to 5% guaranteed, FDIC insured. And as a strategy to use CDs, I like to use what's called a laddered portfolio. And that means that you divide whatever money up that you do intend to put towards CDs and have a certain amount coming due every single year. So let's say you have $25,000. You might put $5,000 down in each year coming due 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4 years, and 5 years. And what that does is that if interest rates go down, great, you've got a CD out at 5% over the next 5 years. But if interest rates go up, that's also good because you have $5,000 coming due that you can then reinvest at a much higher interest rate than the rest of your portfolio. And that's a good idea for bonds. There's very little cost to it. You can get the money in a pinch if you need it by paying a penalty, but the penalty is usually relatively small.
What about as far as bond funds or something like that?
In terms of diversification, bond funds are better because you can buy into a pool of hundreds and hundreds of bond funds. But in terms of simplicity, you don't know exactly what those bonds are worth when you're going to need it. A lot of retired people prefer to have X amount of dollars on X date, and that's comforting to them. Bond funds can provide some nice diversification and liquidity, but they do fluctuate in value. And many times when retired people are looking for fixed income investments, they don't want any fluctuation.
Thank you, Mary. Cynthia in Sun Prairie, good morning.
Good morning. I have a couple of questions with regard to health insurance. My daughter was widowed at the age of 34, and she's at the end of the COBRA and having difficulty finding a private policy, even though she has the certificate of insurability. And my second question is, my youngest son recently graduated from college, is no longer eligible for my insurance and hasn't found a job yet, but I need some health coverage for him.
Any advice on this?
Well, I'm not
Kevin?
An expert I'm even less of an expert on health insurance than I am on other financial matters. But I would say this. First of all, you may be able to increase your daughter's chances of getting insurance if you are willing to go with a high deductible policy. That will not only allow her maybe to get a policy she otherwise wouldn't be able to get, but the premiums are usually lower on that as well. But I would keep trying the insurers, you know, all the Blues and the other ones out there, and just see if you can get something. I would also take a look at ehealthinsurance.com, I think is the site, or it's einsurance.com or something like that. But one of those sites has policies not only for people in your daughter's case, but also for kind of bridge insurance for college students who've graduated but aren't onto their employer's health care coverage yet. Check on that for sure, Cynthia. But trying to find a high deductible policy and then trying to find something on the web is going to be your best bet. Sometimes, is your daughter a Wisconsin resident?
Yes, she is.
Okay. Some states have programs in place to the insurer of last resort. So you can, if you type health insurance in Wisconsin, then you might be able to find this state site that has a program for some people like that.
Yep. Speaking of college graduates, graduation at UW-Madison, I think, is this coming weekend. Mm-hmm. I only have a minute to go. Any words of financial wisdom for the new college graduates?
Absolutely. Again, three good reasons to borrow money. You are going to get hit hard with car loans, all that type of thing. Put yourself on an allowance. If you can pay cash for something, you can afford it. And this is something that, as a graduate almost 20 years ago at the University of Wisconsin, pay all your parking tickets and library fines right now, because they can really build up quickly. I'm just saying.
From personal experience.
Yeah. That's right. That's why I'm in town, is to settle up with the lawyers today.
Kevin, thank you very much for coming in. Let's do this again sometime.
My pleasure, Joy.
Kevin McKinley, a certified financial planner, practitioner at Robert W. Baird & Company in Eau Claire, host of On Your Money, heard Sunday mornings at 7 here on the Ideas Network, author of Make Your Kid a Millionaire, and a member of the Governor's Council on Financial Literacy. He is in Madison today for a kickoff promotion of Money Smart Week in Wisconsin, which is in the fall. You can get more information on that on the website.
MoneySmartWI.org.
Thank you for that. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.